Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. As always, it's great to catch up with you at the end of the week, and boy, what a week it has been. I'm glad you're able to join me. For those of you new to my program, you should know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Spent 30 years with that agency trying to enforce the immigration laws that the current administration and all too many of their allies, both sides of the aisle, both houses of Congress, wish would go away. And that's rather remarkable when you consider that our immigration laws were enacted to achieve two primary goals: protect innocent lives and protect the jobs of American workers. It is just astonishing that you could actually have politicians win elected office in America by promising to ignore America's borders, ignore America's immigration laws, while meanwhile, for the backdrop, we have the threat of terrorism. Again, more terrorists have been arrested. We have the increasing problem with narcotics traffickers operating from coast to coast and border to border, almost with impunity. We have an unemployment rate that's in the stratosphere, and ignore what they're telling you because those numbers are cooked. Madoff could not do a better job on twisting the reality. They come up with a figure of 7-odd% of unemployment when in point of fact, it's a multiple of that because so many people no longer count. And it seems as though where this government is concerned, the aspirations and futures of Americans no longer count. But we'll get to that momentarily. But first, I would like you to know that if you would like to learn a little bit more about me and what I have been up to in the 11-plus years since 9/11, I ask that you go to my website, michaelcutler.net. That's one word, MichaelCutler, michaelcutler.net. I have a second website, talkborder.com, where I have posted videos of interviews that I have conducted. I hope you find them as exciting and worth watching as I do, but not because it's me, but because of the guests who I've had on the program, including one of my few heroes in Washington, Congressman Lou Barletta from Hazleton. I worked with him when he was the mayor of Hazleton, got sued, he did, for enacting ordinances to make the hiring or providing of housing to illegal aliens a crime, to punish those who would do it because of the growing problem his town and his people faced from illegal aliens who were part of gangs such as MS-13. I was his final witness. And Lou is just one of those rare people in Washington who, rather than play games, calls them the way he sees them. I certainly relate to that. Lou, if you're listening, I can't begin to tell you how much I appreciate the great work that you and your staff continue to do in Washington, along with a couple of other stalwarts. And I don't want to come up with a list and then maybe leave somebody out and upset people, but certainly Jeff Sessions, Senator from Alabama, Senator Grassley from Iowa, Congressman Steve King, also from Iowa, Senator Vitter. There are those people in Washington worthy of our support, but boy, oh boy, trying to find them is like taking a stroll through a minefield, literally and figuratively. The third website that I would like all of you to take a look at is Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is CAPSWeb, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb.org. They are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, right off the Pacific Ocean. We're kind of bookends. They are just off the Pacific Coast, and here I am in New York City, just off the Atlantic Coast. Great friends out there. They do great work. Check out their website. I think you'll find it worthwhile. But let's get to the madness that we have been looking at all week. Although, of course, if I was Hillary Clinton, I might say, what difference does it make? What difference does it make that 4 Americans working at the embassy at Benghazi were slaughtered by terrorists? And, of course, we know what those hearings have been like. Remarkable display those hearings have been. Today was the IRS coming under scrutiny for the insanity of apparently providing a different set of rules for political conservatives as compared with anybody else. Political conservatives, religious conservatives. You know, I want to remind everybody that if you think about that statue of Lady Justice, Lady Justice wears a blindfold, the idea being that our laws are supposed to be administered dispassionately, not supposed to be peeking, not supposed to be looking at someone's race or religion or political orientation. In fact, I have to make a point. We give political asylum to aliens in our country if they can show a credible fear, although really they don't have to show much, and we'll get to that also. But in theory, political asylum is provided to aliens who can demonstrate credible fear that they would be persecuted in their home countries because of race, religion, ethnicity, or political beliefs. Tell that to the IRS. And, you know, I'm not a political conservative, those of you familiar with me, and I want to keep politics out of this, but let's be really blunt about this. I am a registered Democrat. I have been a registered Democrat for the more than four decades that I have been voting. I don't know what happened to the Democratic Party. The wheels have certainly come off their wagon. But the Republicans don't have much to brag about either, in my judgment, because neither political party in this day and age really seems to give a damn about the average American citizen. Abraham Lincoln, who talked about a government by the people, of the people, and for the people, must be pinwheeling in his grave, because it would seem that both parties are obsessed with satisfying the Chamber of Commerce, the American Immigration Lawyers Association, the banks and the stock market, the folks with the deep pockets, the special interest groups. You know, this is not what the founding fathers had in mind when this magnificent country was put together nearly a quarter of a millennium ago. The insanity of it all is that the American people, by and large, and I would guess that you folks listening to my voice are not among the foolish fellow Americans that we need to contend with, but they are buying the Kool-Aid and drinking with two straws, not one. This idea that if we bring in millions of foreign workers, somehow that will make more jobs for Americans. I'd like to know how that works. When there are too many people trying to get on an airplane, somebody gets bumped. When there are too many workers in the labor force, workers get bumped. That's what unemployment is about. That's exactly what unemployment is about. Too many workers, too few jobs. The solution to too few jobs is not to bring in more workers. And this idea that everybody we're going to bring in is going to be brilliant and a contributor to society. Look at the Tsarnaev family, for God's sakes. For those of you with short memory, the brothers Tsarnaev were the ones who attacked the Boston Marathon. They killed three people, they maimed hundreds, and they had gotten political asylum. And this isn't an accusation, but I will tell you, if I was back at the old INS or if I was at ICE today, I would be going over their immigration documents with an electron microscope, not just a fine-tooth comb or a magnifying glass. The idea of political asylum is that an alien must demonstrate, as I said a little bit earlier, that they have a credible fear of returning to their native country. So the United States, out of compassion, gave this family, the Tsarnaev family, political asylum. And no sooner do they get legal status than what do? They go back to Russia. Well, don't you think that that kind of makes a mockery of why we give people political asylum? And they're not alone in this. In 1993, a guy by the name of Amir Amilkansi, applied for political asylum. And the record isn't entirely clear. Some sources indicate he was granted political asylum. Other sources indicate that his application was pending. But what I could tell you about Kansi is that he was a citizen of Pakistan. According to publicly available information, he lied and lied consistently throughout his application for asylum. And then, in January 1993, he stood outside CIA headquarters with an AK-47 and opened fire on vehicles being driven by CIA officers into the compound that morning. When the smoke settled, he had killed two and wounded three CIA officers. And he did what transnational criminals and international terrorists are easily able to do. He fled the United States. They have an escape hatch that American criminals don't have. They can flee back to their home countries. And usually that takes them outside the reach of the long arm of American law. Not this time, however. Our folks tracked him down like the dog that he was, dragged his butt back here, put him on trial, found him guilty. He was subsequently executed. But you know what? The people that he killed remained dead. The people that he wounded remained injured. The people who lost loved ones are still feeling that loss today. Perhaps, if our people had scrutinized that application a bit more closely, they would have said, just a second, there's fraud here. Let's go reel this guy in. In the mid-70s, I was part of a pilot program in New York. I was an inspector at Kennedy Airport, and one of my bosses came to me and said, Mike, how would you like to get out of the airport and take a job at the district office working as an adjudications officer, doing interviews to see if people are really married and living together, because we suspect that a lot of the people who claim to be married are married in paper only, these so-called sham or paper marriages. They don't live together. It's a business transaction so that the citizen who files the application gets money or some other reward, and the alien gets a green card. So we started doing the interviews. During the course of my one-year stint over there, we even came up with a law firm. You can't make this stuff up, folks. We found that an American attorney of Chinese ethnicity was arranging marriages, and I kid you not, this is something out of a bad movie, between Chinese crew members who had jumped ship, and as it turned out, Puerto Rican hookers, lesbian hookers, no doubt, or to boot. It was remarkable. When I did the interview, we needed a translator so that I could speak to the alien in question. The U.S. citizen spouse, less than half his age, spoke fluent English and Spanish, not a word of Chinese. He only spoke Chinese. I asked the lawyer, how do they communicate? He said, by a picture book. I won't even tell you what my mind immediately went to. Goodness gracious. It turned out that the attorney was involved with the arrangement of those marriages. So that was my introduction to fraud. That was my introduction into the way that aliens found a loophole or a hole in the system that they could capitalize on. It was the same hole in the system, immigration fraud, that enabled Cansey to stay in the United States. It was the same hole in the system that permitted the terrorists who just 1 month after Cansey shot up the CIA set off a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center. One of those luminaries that this country could not have done without was a farm worker. Thank you, Mr. Chuck Schumer. You were the architect of the agriculture provisions of the amnesty of 86, and you're doing it again. Insanity is doing the same things the same way and expecting a different result. But I don't know that Mr. Schumer cares, because if he cared, he'd be embarrassed. You know, Chuck Grassley was a huge proponent of the 86 amnesty. And I will tell you something amazing about Chuck Grassley. I sat with him at a hearing in Dubuque, Iowa, about 6 years ago. And think of how most members of Congress are. Get them to admit they made a mistake. Gosh, you'd sooner be able to walk on water. Well, Senator Grassley stood at that hearing and said, I made a terrible mistake in 1986. I will not repeat that mistake now. Amnesty is a big mistake. It took my breath away. But Chuck Schumer said, no, if you're an agricultural worker, then you can stay here because we need agricultural workers. So one of the nitwits, one of the bums who killed 6 people, injured 1,000 people, inflicted $500 million in damages on the World Trade Center, and damn near brought the towers down sideways, that I don't even want to begin to imagine what the casualty rate would have been had they succeeded in toppling the towers sideways, was Mahmoud Abu Alima, a guy who got agricultural amnesty, because allegedly he had worked at a bean farm in Florida. The closest this bum ever got to a farm was when he drove his taxi cab past Central Park in New York City. The only thing he ever planted was a bomb in the garage of the Trade Center, and he was not alone. All of the terrorists who were involved in the 93 bombing of the World Trade Center had come here from the Middle East, had gamed the visa process, gamed the immigration benefits program so they could not only enter the United States but embed themselves in the United States. On May 20th, 1997, a gentleman by the name of Henry Hyde, the late former chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, invited me to provide testimony at a committee hearing before the Immigration Subcommittee on the issue of immigration benefit fraud and visa fraud. And the reason for that hearing were those two terrorist attacks committed in 1993. The Clinton administration did not do anything different to plug the holes that enabled two separate and distinct terrorist attacks to be carried out in the United States by aliens who gamed the visa process or the immigration benefits program. To borrow an expression, what difference does that make? Think about the difference that it made to the six who died at the Trade Center, to the two who died at the CIA. Imagine if you're the family members and you say, you know something, my family members died in vain. At least if the government was willing to change the way it did business in the wake of what happened. But oh no. You know, Michelle Malkin made a statement once, and I think she was right. She said, the game isn't over until the alien wins. So we were attacked September 11th, 2001. And guess what? The 19 terrorists that all gamed the visa process, many of them got phony documents or authentic documents by providing false names to government agencies, driver's licenses, and so forth. In 2005, according to the GAO report that was issued a year later, Citizenship and Immigration Services claimed to have lost 111,000 immigration files. They all related to applications for immigration benefits. And guess what? They adjudicated the applications without those pesky files, flying blind. They naturalized 30,000 aliens, 2005, without their files. And now we come to the Tsarnaev brothers, who get political asylum by apparently committing fraud. Again, it needs an investigation, not an accusation, but I'm certainly suspicious of it. And it turned out that three of the students, so-called, who helped to conceal what they did, cover their tracks, again, were either naturalized, in the case of one young man, whose mother, in fact, worked with refugees, well, the other two were students, no longer apparently in attendance in school, but they were even, at least one was readmitted into the United States after USCIS and ICE were notified that this guy was no longer a student. 3 weeks after they got notification, they admitted him through a port of entry as a student. Didn't meet the definition of a student, should never have been admitted, but it's only immigration, folks. This doesn't matter, nothing to see here, keep moving. And then we come to two more cases since then. Two more. You know, the hits just keep on coming. We have a problem now where we have more people entering the United States. And by the way, before I go any further, let me read a section or a little paragraph from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. You know, I've testified before a bunch of these congressional hearings. I gave testimony to the 9/11 Commission. But here is where the 9/11 Commission that was convened to find out what went wrong, ostensibly, so we plug the holes, here's what they had to say. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mohammed Abu Alima, the guy I just spoke about, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmarks plots, received temporary residence under the seasonal, actually special, agricultural worker program after falsely claiming that he had picked beans in Florida. Mohammed Salameh, who rented the truck used in the bombing, overstayed his tourist visa. He then applied for permanent residency under the agriculture worker program, but was rejected. He was rejected, but nobody arrested him. He was out there. They simply said, no, you can't have a green card, but nobody went looking for him. Under the pilot program that I worked on, when we did the marriage interviews, agents would go out and arrest the aliens. And you do it so that aliens don't think, well, I'll apply for a benefit, and if I don't get it, nothing changes. you have to arrest people if they raise their hand and say, here I am, and then you can prove that they lied on their application, which is a felony. And by the way, if you commit visa fraud today in conjunction with terrorism, it's a 25-year felony. This is not a minor offense, folks. There aren't too many crimes in the federal penal code that call for a 25-year jail sentence. This is heavy duty. And then finally, they note that Ayad Mahmoud Ismail, who drove the van containing the bomb, took English language classes at Wichita State University in Kansas on a student visa. After he dropped out, he remained in the United States out of status. Sound familiar? So here we have people talking about no political asylum. In fact, when they talk about Yusuf, that was Ramzi Yusuf. And again, he was one of the bombers at the Trade Center. He applied for political asylum and lied through his teeth. And we actually granted him political asylum. So in 1993, this is what happens. The 9/11 Commission is convened after the fact, and they said, you got to tighten up on political asylum. You got to do things differently, because if you don't do things differently, you're going to get the same results. Well, the Washington Times, on April 22nd of this year, ran an article with the title, 99% of illegal immigrants get approval for legal status. High number raises concerns about fraud. You think? According to the article, Citizenship and Immigration Services has approved or has processed 270,000 applications for participation in this DACA program, Deferred Action Childhood Admission, Childhood Arrival. This is the DREAM Act that doesn't exist anywhere, but in the, you know, it's a virtual law. It doesn't exist, but it's the law of the land de facto by the stroke of a presidential pen. Now, guess how tough the interview is that aliens are subjected to so they could participate in the program so that our people are confident that, number one, these people are who they claim they are, that they're not lying about their country of citizenship, that they're not lying about their names, that they're not lying about when they got here. You would imagine, I suspect, that you would expect that this would be a heavy-duty interview so that there's certainty that we're giving the benefit only to those people who should get it, right? I wish I could say raise your hands, but obviously that won't work. So you can raise your hand, I just won't be able to see it. And that's exactly, by the way, how they are processing these applications. Don't ask, don't tell, sight unseen, sight unseen. Guess what? You know how long the interview is? There is no interview. These folks don't even have to come into an immigration office. All they do is submit paperwork, and they get a handy-dandy official identity document in the mail within days. And that document, I will tell you, entitles them to immediately get a driver's license, a Social Security card, they can open bank accounts, they can get a job, they can travel freely around the United States, they can get on board airplanes. Sight unseen. But if you're an American citizen and you're 85 years old and you are confined to a wheelchair, the TSA may well decide that they need to strip search you, because God only knows that 85-year-old senior citizen in a wheelchair is just waiting for the opportunity to overpower the flight crew. This is the lunacy, the charade that now national security has become. It is more than infuriating. It is something that is endangering our safety. Now, I want to talk to you about another terrorism case, and this is remarkable. This story came out a few days ago, nearly a week ago, actually, May 9th, 2013. NBC News reported that a man charged in New York had connections to Canadian terror suspects. In April, around April 22nd, April 23rd, somewhere around there, two Canadians, they had been born in Tunisia, were arrested, and it was publicly reported that their plan was to derail a train somewhere near the U.S.-Canadian border filled with passengers and see how many people they could kill. Turned out that these were well-educated college students in Canada. One of these guys, in fact, was working on his doctoral degree in nanotechnology and had done research into the HIV virus. We're talking about really smart, highly educated people. These aren't three drunks sitting on a bar stool arguing over, you know, can a firecracker bring down an airplane? These are people who really have the smarts and the training, and Canada was nice enough to give them the training. Well, there was a third arrestee, and finally, we find out who the third guy was, and the third guy turned out to be somebody who had actually gotten a visa to enter the United States so that he could carry out terror attacks from inside the United States. How unbelievable is that story? So you have this guy who claims that his goal is to create a terror attack in the United States. His name was Ahmed Abbasi, also a Tunisian. He was credited, if you want to call it crediting somebody, with radicalizing one of the Canadian students. And in tapes that they made, that the FBI made, they had him under surveillance, he said that his goal was to poison the air or water to kill 100,000 Americans. 100,000 Americans, okay? Why have we heard nothing in the 5 days since he was arrested? They announced that he was arrested. It appeared on NBC News. It appeared in a couple of other places. And the story just went poof. Poof. They're busy worrying about who's going to be given the death sentence for murder, whether it's the abortion doctor or that female murderer. That's got the headlines. The fact that you had three highly skilled operators who, by the way, were working with Iranian intelligence services back in Tehran, you would think that this would be the headline story, and it went away. Maybe it went away, and I don't know that this is the case, but you have to wonder. You know, in law enforcement, we had an expression that if you see a coincidence, look again. Maybe the story went away because it pointed out that there's a hell of a lot more to a dysfunctional immigration system than that thoroughly screwed up Mexican border. Maybe that's the reason they didn't want the story out there. And perhaps the news media, knowing where their bread is buttered, they know where they get the money from commercials and who's going to advertise, decided, perhaps, maybe I'm wrong. If somebody out there has a different way of seeing the universe, give me a call. Let's talk about it. You can reach me on my website, michaelcutler.net. You can call me at 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. But understand the issue, folks. This story just fell off the map. So, once again, what do we have? Aliens, this time on the Canadian border, and that's not part of comprehensive reform. No one's talking about the Canadian border. Committing visa fraud. No one's talking about visa fraud and comprehensive immigration reform, right? But this is about keeping America safe, we thought. Maybe you did. I didn't. They have an ulterior motive. They don't care. But it gets worse. But it gets worse. If you don't think this is bad enough, this is a story that appeared on CNN yesterday, and the Atlantic Wire ran the piece as well. Here is the CNN headline. First on CNN, witness protection program lost two known or suspected terrorists. How does that one grab you? And this was based on an Inspector General report. The Inspector General report did a thing about WITSEC, the Witness Security Program, or the Witness Protection Program. Having read this article, I will forevermore refer to it as the Witless Protection Program. It turns out that there are 18,000 people in the Witness Protection Program, which makes sense. As an agent, I work with them, because if you provide evidence against murderers, drug dealers, terrorists, there's a good chance that this may have an impact on your health, like the bad guys might want to kill you. So they relocate these people. They've done movies about it. Some were comedies, some were serious. But this is an old story. They give these folks a new identity, and they move them to the other side of the country so that their lives are spared, so that way people are willing to come forward. Well, that's really great, because they need to do this. And as an agent, I understood that I couldn't do my job without informants. I couldn't do my job without knowing what was really going on. But it turns out, I mean incredibly, it turns out that these folks at WITSEC never notified other agencies about the new names they gave these people. Now, it's important that they have confidentiality, because the more that people know, the more likelihood that there's a leak, and if there's a leak, somebody can get killed. I fully understand. But realize that what they said in the report was that the people who decide who can or cannot get on an airplane had no idea about any of these terrorists, and it now turns out that of the 18,000 in the program, WITSEC doesn't even know which of them are terrorists. I mean, if you want to talk about the gang that couldn't shoot straight, here we go again. So let's look at the track record that we are amassing. You have the Tunisians that were going to blow us up. One guy gets visa, was charged with visa fraud. The story goes away, but clearly this is a serious problem. You have the witness protection program, not knowing how many terrorists have been given new identities, and nobody knows what identities they've been given. So we put these people into their little witness protection program, and they even said in the article that they think at least one of these guys is no longer in the United States. They think? You know, just because somebody becomes a cooperator doesn't make him a good guy. It makes him a cooperator who decided that by doing the math, it was in his or her best advantage to cooperate, to play ball. Maybe they were looking at a significant jail sentence or whatever. But that doesn't make them moral, decent people. Nobody, you know, waves a magic wand over them and says, hey, now you're Prince Charming. But we don't know whether or not they're in the United States. And now we come back again to that wonderful Mexican border that Janet Napolitano tells us is really secure. Trust her. I could trust how far I could throw my house before I could trust Janet Napolitano. So she says, oh, the border is secure. Well, let me tell you, with that lack of security, these terrorists could just as easily have turned around and come back across the border, and nobody would even know who they're looking for, because WITSEC never shared their name with anybody. This is the lunacy that we are now dealing with, folks. And finally, we get to this story. And so now, this is the last story. There is a guy from Russia, again, who was arrested in Idaho, and he was charged with wanting to carry out terrorist attacks in Uzbekistan, but he was operating here in the United States. But they said his immigration status was okay. He is apparently not an illegal alien, but he was born in Uzbekistan. But there's nothing in the news media or in the reports that's publicly available, at least up until now, that addresses the magical mystery question of how did this guy get here. Now, by the way, you should know that he's been working as a truck driver in Idaho. For me, as a former INS agent, and I've worked on terrorism and narcotics trafficking, not necessarily a suspicious thing, but we do know that most of the terrorists that we've looked at tend to get jobs that give them access to vehicles. The guy Cansey, who shot up the CIA, became part owner in a courier service, so he drove a courier truck which had the markings on it. So, you know, you kind of look at this thing like trees in a forest. It doesn't stand out. Drive a yellow taxi cab, nobody notices you, because there are so many yellow cabs in New York. A yellow cab in Midtown Manhattan, it's like the leaves on a tree. Try to find the leaf that's faulty. It's camouflage and it's mobility. And this guy, driving a truck from Uzbekistan, gets arrested for wanting to put together bombs that he was going to supposedly send back to Uzbekistan. Hopefully we didn't get him angry here, because maybe he'd want to use them here. Again, he's not been found guilty. He's only been arrested. He's got a long way to go to be convicted. But this is the stuff that gives me nightmares. This is the stuff that should give you nightmares. Time and time again, since April, we're now dealing with three terrorists from Tunisia, another suspected terrorist from Uzbekistan, and the hits just keep on coming. And that's just in about a month or so, not even a month. Or just a month, in fact. It's 2 days beyond a month since the April 15th attack in Boston. So already we have four more terrorists from overseas involved in terrorism, apparently, allegedly. But yet, when we hear about comprehensive immigration reform, the eight gangsters, as I've come to call them, do not talk about fraud, do not talk about visa overstays, do not talk about students who fail to go to school. All they want everybody to do is to focus on the Mexican border, and then everything will be just honky-dory. You cannot make this stuff up. You know, I understand when somebody does the math and says, well, if people are going to speed and nobody gets hurt, so, you know, we won't enforce this law or that law. And believe me, in some communities, you go a little bit over the limit, and they'll come after you because of revenue. In fact, now in Washington, they have speed cameras. It's about the revenue. But here we have demonstrated. Here the 9/11 Commission warned about the nexus between visa fraud, immigration benefit fraud, political asylum, foreign students. You know, I was on the program with Megyn Kelly, delightful young woman, great reporter, did something that unfortunately is all too unusual, especially with television reporters, television anchors, asked me a series of questions, but each time provided her thoughts and then quickly got out of the way so that I had ample opportunity to answer her questions. And one of the points I made on the program, and I hope that at some point she will invite me back because it was enjoyable doing an interview with someone who really gives you that opportunity to articulate your thoughts, especially when the issue is so serious as this issue is. And I had made the point to her, and I'll make the point to you, because we were talking about foreign students. Right now, according to the General Accountability Office, there are approximately 850,000 foreign students in the United States. In 2011, 447,000 student visas were issued. There are over 10,000 schools that are authorized to petition the government to get foreign students to come to attend those schools. Think of those numbers. We have 7,000 ICE agents for the whole country, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Over half of them are doing customs, not immigration work. What that means is they have nothing to do with foreign nationals and whether or not they've committed fraud in their applications, whether or not they violated the terms of their admission, nothing like that. So you've got about 3,000 agents doing that. You have 850,000 students. There's a CVIS tracking program, which is a computerized database that's supposed to flag students who overstay. Who do you think is looking for them? Nobody. As I said on the air, this is a game of hide and seek where they hide and nobody seeks. How many people do you think are going out and knocking on doors and looking to see if those 10,000 schools even exist in the real world, if they aren't virtual schools, mills, if you will, that simply for the right price will get a foreign student a visa so they can come here and get lost? Because by not looking for people to violate the terms of their admission, why run the border? Why run the border? We keep on hearing that the farmers need farm workers. And you know something? This is remarkable. Because there is a program, the H-2A visa program, and for Mexican citizens in particular, by the way, they can get an H-2A visa literally overnight, and they can come to the United States legally and work on a farm, legally. They're entitled to work. They're entitled to send money home. Not many farmers do that. They would just as soon hire illegals. And they claim, well, you know, it's just too damn tough. Too damn tough? Really? There is a process in place, and if we can streamline it or make that a little bit more workable, that's fine. But let me tell you what's wrong with this agriculture worker program more than anything else. And this is why farmers should be screaming at the top of their lungs that we need to enforce the law. Because if a farmer does the paperwork and does apply for a foreign student to come to the United States with the H-2A visa, and this farmer doesn't show up, this farm worker fails to show, nobody looks for him. So everybody around the world knows the trick. You get a visa, you come to the United States, and you go poof. And no one's going to look for you. It doesn't matter. Once again, I have to quote Ms. Hillary Clinton, what difference does it make? So what if they don't go to the job on the farm? So what if they get lost out there someplace? The immigration system is supposed to have integrity. It's supposed to have integrity so that when people file a petition for a foreign worker, they know the worker is going to show up on the job. It's supposed to have integrity so we make certain that we don't admit people into the United States to work and then displace Americans. That's illegal. But then you have to understand that the Gang of Eight have a capo. They have a leader. They have the guy who pulls the strings and tells them what to do. Because they're not smart enough to do this by themselves. The name of the guy is Alan Greenspan. April 30th, 2009, Alan Greenspan went before Chuck Schumer's Immigration Subcommittee and talked about the need to greatly reduce inequality in wages. And that sounds real good. You shouldn't have inequality in wages, and I agree. If it's based on race, religion, gender, ethnicity, age, I agree. Equal pay, equal work, great. I'm with you. But he wasn't talking about that. It was deceptive language because that's all these people have. They are con artists, the bunch of them. And he said, inequality in wages based on skill. Well, folks, I thought the American dream was about getting an education so that you would make more money. My father, may he rest in peace, was a plumber. He was a plumber by trade, as he would proudly tell anybody who asked what he did for a living. Meaning, he wasn't just a fix-it guy. There's nothing wrong with those guys, too. We need them. But my dad worked on construction. He was a tradesman. It took years to become a journeyman. If I'm not mistaken, it took 4 or 5 years. Almost the same as going to college, isn't it? And I will tell you that in my Cutler world, a talented, experienced plumber, carpenter, electrician, bricklayer, auto mechanic is no less valuable than a school teacher or an accountant or whatever. America is a big orchestra, and we all have an instrument to play. So this notion that, according to Greenspan, no matter how skilled or educated or well-trained you are, we should all earn more or less the same money. And he actually had the chutzpah, as we like to say in Brooklyn. This is Greenspan, referred to Americans with skills as the privileged elite. And he said that the solution to this excess of wage premium, his words, not mine, don't blame me, I didn't say it, I'm just reporting on it. The solution to this wage premium that this group of privileged elite workers was making, the solution is to bring in unlimited numbers of foreign workers, and through wage competition, we could take care of that premium. In other words, lower the wages of American workers. I thought that America was at its best when America's citizens were at their best, when their incomes were ascending, when opportunities were growing. Don't believe it, not according to Greenspan, and I assure you that the Gang of Eight, bolstered by the Chamber of Commerce and a bunch of other characters like them, are looking at the average American and saying, oh, no, no, we got to clip these turkeys' wings. You know, it's just astonishing to me that we could even be having an argument about whether or not our borders are secure enough. When we know that there are criminals roaming in the neighborhood, the police will always warn the people who live in that town. Folks, whether you go out for the evening, if you're home and asleep, whatever, lock your doors, lock the windows, set your alarm. We just had a home invasion at Hofstra University last night. I don't want to get the facts wrong, but I believe the young lady who died in a police shootout, that the cops engaged with the home invader who invaded this young lady's off-campus apartment where she lived with her, I believe, her twin sister. The guy broke into the house and the shootout followed. When you see things like that, home invasions, smart people say, I got to lock the doors. I got to put better locks on my doors. If you go into tough neighborhoods, people put gates on their windows to keep the burglars out. The United States of America lives in a high-crime neighborhood. It's the rest of the world. We've seen terrorists and criminals from around the world come to America to ply their trades. The gates, if you will, are the way that we provide access to our country to those who are not citizens. Whether it's securing the Mexican border, whether it's requiring visas of foreign nationals, incredibly, when 9/11 happened, we had 26 or 27 visa waiver countries. We're now up to 37. We keep on making it easier and easier and easier for foreign nationals to enter the United States because the Chamber of Commerce came up with a program. Write this down, folks, because when I get off the air, I want you to go to your computer and look it up. It's called the Discover America Partnership. And they brag about how they're applying pressure to the government, a.k.a. the politicians, probably through campaign contributions. You know, why else do you give people money? So they do what you want. I give my barber money, so he cuts my hair. These folks give the politicians money, so the politicians will do their bidding. They're almost the employees of the people who give them the money. And they brag about how they are pushing to eliminate difficulties in getting people into America. Well, why is that? Because they just see customers. They see people filling the seats of airplanes, sleeping on the beds in hotels, sitting in the restaurants, sitting in the ball games, going to the theater. It's about getting people in, and that's fine. I am all for the profit motive. I'm all for compromise, but not when we compromise on national security and the future of our country and our citizens and our children. This is a level of rampant greed that makes the robber barons of the 1800s look like Boy Scouts and gentlemen. I believe I have a caller. Let's see who's trying to join us. This is Mike Cutler. Who's calling?
Hello, Mr. Cutler. This is Steve Salvi with Ohio Jobs and Justice Back.
Steve Salvi, happy Friday. I'm so glad you were able to join me, Steve. How are you?
Well, thank you. I appreciate the invitation. I'm sorry I'm late. I was out and just got your message.
Well, you're going to get two demerits. Why don't you tell my audience a little bit about who you are and the mischief you're up to? You know, there's going to be a hearing next week in Ohio, folks, and Steve made it possible for me to work with one of the members of the state legislature to provide testimony. And this is about providing driver's licenses to illegal aliens. Just more examples of insanity, wouldn't you say? I think you're getting feedback. Can you hear me okay, Steve?
Yeah, now I can. Actually, good. I'm outside trying to get a good signal. Yeah, basically what Ohio Jobs and Justice does, we educate and advocate for responsible immigration laws, and we try to help inform the general public about what's going on in the country, as you have been doing so well and providing such valuable service over so many years.
Well, thank you, Steve. Why don't you give everybody your website that people should go visit? Write this down, folks. It's a good website.
The Mike, my website is O is in Ohio, J is in Jobs, J is in Justice, PAC, most people know PAC for Political Action Committee, but this is People Against Corruption, and it's .org. So
oh,
OJJ,
you got your work cut out for you, don't you?
OJJPAC.org, O-R-G.
That's excellent. You know, I was just chatting with my audience about the crazy stuff. Since the bombing in Boston, April 15th, 2 days more than a month ago, we've had four more terrorists identified, or suspected terrorists identified between Canada and the United States. I don't know if you saw the story about the Marshal Service, WITSEC. They don't even know how many terrorists are in the Witness Protection Program or where they are, and they haven't shared the names that they gave these people with law enforcement. So they put on the stealth cloaking device, and nobody knows where these people are or what they're up to. You know, I'm certainly concerned about their well-being if they've cooperated, but don't you think that the government of the United States should be putting the safety and well-being of American citizens ahead of everything else?
Yeah, I agree, and frankly, I believe the Obama administration has put they're using arbitrary executive actions that really pose a threat to the nation and the rule of law.
Well, I agree with you. You know, it's interesting. They were using, the Obama administration has used this idea of prosecutorial discretion to give illegal aliens, we're talking now 270,000 so far, and God knows what the final number will be, official identity documents without so much as a face-to-face interview. Now, these are undocumented aliens. They have no viable, reliable proof as to who they are, or at least if they have it, they're not sharing it with anybody.
Right. It's garbage in, garbage out.
Yes. Now, here's the problem with that. Prosecutorial discretion can make sense. When I worked with Senator D'Amato to get the reentry law changed to make reentry for criminal aliens a 20-year crime, which now, by the way, makes immigration violations half of all federal prosecutions, I said to D'Amato back then, I said, you know, what we need to do is prioritize criminals over non-criminals. That means focus the big guns on the bad guys. But if you encounter an illegal alien as you're looking for a bad guy or as you're doing an investigation, take that illegal alien into custody simply so that the word is out on the street that if you're at the wrong place at the wrong time and some agent runs into you, you can get arrested. You know, it's just this idea about deterrence. Here, it's not even that they're saying we're not going to arrest you because we don't have the resources. They're saying we don't have the resources, but if you mail in an application, we'll send you an identity document. This isn't prosecutorial discretion. This is aiding, abetting, harboring, shielding, inducing. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. Well,
and this is unprecedented.
Right. You know, there's the take care clause in the Constitution, and, you know, the president is basically breaching his, in my opinion, breaching his constitutional duty by refusing to enforce the immigration laws. And, you know, some people might argue he has, you know, some leeway, but the problem is he's basically telling the Border Patrol and Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, you cannot enforce the law for this class of people. And you're not talking situations where, you know, onesie twosies, he's picked a class that is probably, you know, the estimate was 1.7 million. Who knows? It could be 3 million, 5 million.
Well, we don't know. You know, back in 1986, we were told that 1 million to 1.5 million illegal aliens would participate in the amnesty. By the time the dust settled, we had between 3.5 and 4 million. So I want you folks out there just to think about this. Think about it. Right now, we're being told there's between 11 and 12 million. The last time, they were wrong by a factor of 3. If they're wrong by a factor of 3 now, we're looking at 35 million. Now, when you're sitting in traffic and you can't move and you say to yourself, where do these people come from? Here's an answer. When you can't get a seat on the bus or the commuter train, there's the answer. When you wait online for gasoline, there's the answer. When you find that the classes for your children are overcrowded or that it takes 12 or 15 or 18 hours to wait your turn in an emergency room in the hospital, there's your answer. When you can't find a job, realize that anybody who gets legal status has exactly as much right as an American born in America or naturalized or who came here with a green card to get a job. So we are importing competitors for jobs that we don't even have. As it is, we're bringing in more foreign workers every month than the number of jobs that are being created. So there's another component to the problem that we're dealing with. And then, of course, first and foremost, is that when people run the border, it's not always only to get a job. Some of them are fugitives from justice in their home countries. They've committed a heinous crime, and they're on the run trying to get away from the police or other law enforcement authorities. Some of them are coming here specifically to ply their trades as members of gangs or drug cartels or terrorist organizations. And not all terrorists hijack airplanes or set off bombs. There are plenty of people who are part of a terrorist organization who only serve one or two purposes. They provide lodging for the stranger that pops in the middle of the night. They let the guy sleep there, and then he moves on. They might do surveillance and take photographs of a place and send it off to somebody. And most troubling, they may also become involved in crime to generate money so that the money can then be used to carry out the objectives of terrorist or criminal organizations. Just like the military, not everybody who wears the Air Force uniform is a pilot. Probably only 5 or 6% of people that wear the Air Force blue work in the cockpit. So understand the magnitude of the problem, and you have Chuck Schumer and the rest of the Gang of Eight. You have the president, you have other members of Congress who are blithely ignoring the irreparable damage that comprehensive reform and all these other programs will do, and in fact right now are doing, to America and Americans.
I mean, you know, at best, Obama's prosecutorial discretion, you know, I see it as either unconstitutional or unmoral political expediency, not prosecutional discretion.
I agree. In fact, I wrote a piece for the Fox News Latino. I called it prosecutorial deception.
You're right. And I think that's exactly what it is, and of the worst kind. Of the worst kind, because it's putting our nation at risk and everyone in the community, in their own community and their families across the United States, all 50 states, as you've stated before. All 50 states are now border states.
Yep, and what happened in Boston was preventable once again. If immigration had looked at the Tsarnaev family and said, wait a minute, we gave them political asylum and they promptly went back to Russia, they have no credible fear, that's prima facie evidence, they lied on the application, and then if they had dug into it and had stripped them of political asylum and sent them home, those two guys would most likely not have been in the United States, not have been able to carry out those attacks. Most likely that little 8-year-old boy, that woman, the police officer, the people that were maimed, they never would have been harmed. You know, ignoring the law has ripple effects. It's kind of like the butterfly effect. I believe it was Muhammad Atta who a day or two before 9/11, got pulled over for speeding by a police officer who didn't call immigration. Imagine if immigration had taken Muhammad Atta, the ringleader of 9/11, off the street. The attack wouldn't have happened. We probably wouldn't have known about the attack. But the point is that often as an agent, through randomness, I would arrest somebody for a simple violation of law. We went back to the guy's house to get the passport or whatever, and we found evidence that the guy was involved in a crime group, a drug group, in some cases terrorism. It's a valid form of law enforcement. It's called randomness. Half the FBI's 10 most wanted get arrested by a cop doing a routine car stop, speeding, running a red light, blowing a stop sign, broken taillight. And suddenly they find that the guy is a wanted criminal. You know, you need to enforce these laws. And to turn around and minimize the laws and have Schumer say, well, we need a fair pathway to citizenship, we naturalize well over 500,000 aliens every year. We give green cards to more than 1 million aliens every year. That's more than the rest of the world combined. So when Schumer makes these statements, we need to have a fair pathway to citizenship. And then Rubio says, well, we're going to put them on the back of the line. And people say, wow, he's tough. Back of the line for what? These folks don't want to be citizens. They just want to work. And that line is only about a day long. You put in your paperwork, you get permission to work, and everything after that, who cares? They are now able to work and travel freely and get driver's licenses and Social Security cards, and that happens instantaneously.
So what line are we talking about? Yeah. And, Mike, another problem, it's not only federal. For example, Mike DeWine, now the Attorney General of Ohio, well, he used to be the Ohio Senator. Well, he's not Senator anymore. Now he's our Attorney General. And he's always been sort of a pro-amnesty guy. So what does he do? He writes an opinion regarding the DACA executive order and encouraging the state of Ohio to give driver's licenses to DACA recipients. So, you know, we're fighting people not only at the federal level, but it's at the state level as well.
It's really astonishing. It's really astonishing. And look, the arguments are going on all over the country about providing in-state tuition for illegal aliens. Meanwhile, tuition is going up. They are curtailing greatly programs for kids with learning disabilities such as autism. We need to do more about that, about helping kids with autism, American kids. The money's not there. We have American kids going to universities, and they can't find work. So we're importing more foreign workers, more foreign students, and we're going to provide in-state tuition for people who shouldn't even be in the country. I mean, this level of lunacy defies any kind of comprehension they could possibly have.
And that's why I would encourage your listeners to take action. You know, it's good to listen to the radio shows and to keep you up on what's going on in the country and perhaps in some states. But you really need to get out and make phone calls send out emails, meet your members of Congress and even your local and state officials, and let them know what you know and demand some accountability.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. We have to be the squeakiest wheels on the block. You know, I always like to make the analogy that we go to restaurants, we're generally very specific about the food that we want to eat the way we want it to be prepared. We need to be no less specific about what we expect of elected representatives.
And, you know, the funny thing is, the representatives let us know. And when, for example, the Tea Party 912 groups, et cetera, got more involved after 2007, then they had seemed to hold fewer meetings, and when the people actually wanted to tell them, the public officials really didn't want to listen. But you still have to keep at it and force them to listen and go to their offices. And if they won't give me an appointment, show up anyway and call their office every day. This is not something you do once a month or once a year. You really need – this is – the importance is the future of the United States, and this is going to take every citizen some dedicated action if you really want to have some good results.
Couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, a good message to give a member of Congress who's been voting against what you think are our best interests is to not only tell them I'm not going to vote for you because they don't care. But what you need to tell them is, listen, I'm going to work tirelessly to raise money and get anybody, I mean anybody who runs against you, elected. I will vote against you in the primary, and I will vote against you in the general election, and I will get as many of my neighbors to do the same. These folks do not want a real job, most of them. So you have to put the fear of the electorate into those people that are unwilling to do the right thing. And in those rare cases where you've got a politician doing the right thing, support that politician. The Lou Barlettas, the Jeff Sessions, the Chuck Grassleys, the other members of Congress, the Steve Kings, they need to hear from you. Offer your support to them because they are bucking a very powerful machine and they are worthy of our support. Your thoughts, Steve?
Well, I agree with you 100%. I used to work for the Ohio legislature years ago, and I can tell you, even sometimes, you know, one letter, although I don't suggest sending actual letters to Congress anymore because of the Ryson scare, it take months before
they
get them.
Fax them. If you get their fax, they'll be faxed.
Yeah, fax them. But even a letter, a couple letters, can really get a legislator's attention. And so don't think your individual call or your individual letter will not make a difference. It does put them on notice. And consider writing letters to the editor because those reach a great number of people. And what they did the Ohio legislature is they cut out the clerk's office, cuts out all the articles, and then they copy them and distribute them to all the legislators. So your letter might reach every member of your state legislature.
And the other thing is if enough people contact the news media, whether it's the newspaper, the radio, the TV, and if you don't think they're covering the stories, let them know and tell them. Your news programs are becoming increasingly irrelevant to me, my family, and my neighbors. We know you're not covering the stories. So what's the point in my listening to your program? And that's what their revenue depends on, folks.
Yeah, I would agree there. And take advantage of the radio, and there's radio stations, there's talk shows in which you can call in and bring up particular issues, and that can reach a great number of people, too. So you can magnify, you know, the few minutes you spend on the telephone calling in might reach 10,000, 50,000, 100,000 people, and you can get people to think at least about the issue and bring it to their attention, and perhaps you'll get some of those people activated.
A final point as we're getting towards the close of the show, and I'm really glad you called in, Steve. You know, we've got to stop being so divided as a country. Our opponents love the fact that we're at each other's throat. It's called divide and conquer. I'm a registered Democrat. I've been given the privilege twice of speaking at the Tea Party convention in South Carolina, Myrtle Beach. Joe did a great job inviting me, and Joe, if you're listening, I thank you. I actually spoke right after Newt Gingrich and Santorum spoke during the presidential election season. And when I told people I was a Democrat, but first and foremost I was an American, I want you to know I got an amazing reaction from the crowd. People who are on the other political side aren't your enemies. They are Americans. They are demonstrating their freedom of speech, which is why the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, said that in addition to freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion, that you have the right to seek redress of grievances. And boy, if you don't have grievances, check for a flatline EEG. And they also talked about the right to peaceably assemble. And peaceable assemblage was designed to encourage debate, discourse, discussion, because really and truly, that is a part of the democratic process. There are people who don't even realize what the facts are. Don't charge at people. When I was a kid, I'm old enough to remember the door-to-door salesman who would sell vacuum cleaners and Fuller brushes and all kinds of stuff. Girl Scout cookies. No door-to-door salesman would ring your bell, you open the door, and they punch you in the mouth. That doesn't work. You want to be ingratiating and say to the person, look, I know we probably disagree, but I want you to think about something. And this is why I'm telling you this. And I have done it with people. I have done that with people. And you'd be amazed at how many people don't understand the facts. They are laboring under a misconception. Arm yourself with the best information possible. I'm not asking you to go out there like somebody proselytizing a religion, and I won't name any religions here, but you know what I'm talking about. But if an opportunity presents itself and you can engage in a brief, reasonable, calm conversation, who knows, you might even win some converts. And that's really what's important. You know, immigration right now is experiencing a perfect storm for the other side. They've got Democrats and Republicans. The Democrats are looking for voters, and somehow there are some people who are being kind-hearted and don't get it, and they think, well, these poor people need a job, not thinking about America's poor, not thinking that one in six American families is on food stamps and living below the poverty line. So if you can explain that to people, you know, and then you've got the Republicans who are looking out for corporate interests. When I was a kid, that was the delineation. The Democrats in Brooklyn was the party of the blue-collar workers, the union people, the school teachers, the letter carriers, and so forth. And the Republicans were the people who owned the businesses. And there was an understanding of why there was that delineation. It made perfect sense. Well, today, the immigration issue has allies on both sides of the aisle. We need to do something about getting people to understand this issue for what it really is.
Very good. Well, Mike, I'm going to sign off. I appreciate you inviting me onto your radio show. Perhaps we can do it again in the future.
I'd love to do it. Put out your website one more time. Let's have it one more time.
Sure. It's Ohio Jobs and Justice PAC. You can go to OJJPAC.org. And I'm confused over my own website. OJJPAC.org. It's been a long day, Mike.
I realize. I'll try to get a hold of you over the weekend. I'll be working on that testimony for you guys. So
right.
I'll talk to you then. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure. Have a good evening.
Yep, you too.
Bye.
Yeah. It was great to hear from Steve Salvi, and that's what I've been doing, folks, ever since 9/11, working with state legislatures and also trying to participate in debates, discussions, panel discussions around the country. If you become aware of such opportunities, you can reach me at my website, michaelcutler.net. You can reach me and my friends in Santa Barbara, California, at capsweb.org, or you can check out talkborder.com. But to reach me, easiest way is either through capsweb.org or especially michaelcutler.net. There's a link so that I will get your email. Include a phone number, how I can get a hold of you. And if you become aware of a speaking opportunity, I'm certainly interested in it. We need to have these discussions, folks. We need to do what needs to be done before these folks drive the bus off the cliff, because that's what they're really trying to do. I like to remind people that immigration is not a single issue, but a singular issue, because of how many other aspects of America it impacts, ranging from national security, criminal justice, and public safety to the economy, unemployment, health care, public health, the economy, unemployment. Everything is getting hammered. And it's not about vilifying immigrants. The difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. You know, it's always great joining all of you at the end of the week. It's a good experience for me to know that I do have a way of connecting with my fellow Americans, because unfortunately, all too often, the major news stations don't want to discuss these issues for a host of reasons. Having this internet radio program provides me with that opportunity to provide you with information that you're probably not getting anyplace else. I am thrilled to join you. I want to remind you, as I always do at the end of my commentaries, that democracy is not a spectator sport. I am counting on you to do your share, to meet with your elected representatives, to speak to your neighbors. If you contact me, I will add you to my list for my commentaries. I am trying to create, as I sometimes like to say, a bucket brigade of truth. So I look forward to hearing from all of you. Look forward to joining you all again next week at the same time, at the same place, on the Michael Cutler Hour. Meanwhile, folks, I hope you're all going to have a wonderful weekend coming up. Spring is in the air. Have a terrific weekend. See you next week, folks.